Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Nobody does it better than Regent Seven Seas Cruises. Enjoy all-inclusive, unrivaled luxury with unlimited shore excursions, indulgent cuisine, personalized service, and more aboard spacious all-suite ships. Visit rssc.com to experience the unrivaled.
D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, David Janes here with you. Derek Mason on the sideline again today. Still feeling under the weather, but we gave Derek an extra day to recuperate because we're going to be on the road starting tomorrow. And we will tell you more about where we will be as the SEC tournament gets underway. David and I are back at the Game Nashville studios. Willie Donick in Northern California with the Nashville Predators, who open a road trip tonight against the San Jose Sharks. A late puck drop of 9:30 p.m. Central, pregame at 8:30, of course, right here on 102.5, 106.3 the game. Hello, Willie. How are you?
Hello, Adam. Good to talk to you guys.
How's California treating you?
So far, so good. Beautiful weather here. It's in the 50s in San Jose. Sunny. You know the scene. Very scenic. So we'll see. We'll see what the team brings to the table on this California road trip. Starts tonight against the Sharks, who have gutted their roster. They've got a lot of young players in there, and we will not see the Yaroslav, as he now goes by, Askarov rematch tonight because he is injured and he has not played well of late. He's been in the minors. And so that would have been some good theater, as it was the last time. But you will not see round two of that just yet.
So, Willie, yesterday as you were preparing to depart for San Jose, the news broke that the Titans signed offensive tackle Dan Moore Jr. to a four-year, $82 million contract, $50 million in guarantees. And I would say that the instant reaction to that move was unenthusiastic. My favorite reaction came from Andrew Filipponi, who is a sports talk radio host for 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh. This was his tweet, quote, $50 million for Dan Moore Jr. is the worst use of $50 million in the history of American currency since Alexander Hamilton invented the U.S. Treasury. So that was the spiciest take on the Dan Moore signing. And oftentimes, as we know, Willie, in free agency, regardless of sport, the hot takes are flying as soon as the contract figures come out. But it seems over the course of the day, cooler heads prevailed. And I thought Jared on his show said it well, that the Titans had a huge need on the offensive line. We know that. We've known this. And sometimes you're going to overpay to make a problem go away. So you sign Dan Moore to be your left tackle. You shift J.C. Latham to right tackle. Hopefully, you're set at tackle for the foreseeable future. There are other elements of the offensive line we will discuss, but since you left before we really dove into the Dan Moore of it all, what is your take on the Titans signing of Dan Moore to a four-year, $82 million contract?
Well, Jared, I think, makes the right point, and I think we made this last year in free agency. It's buyer beware. Players get overpaid in free agency. And I think this was the case here. Now, do you feel like with Bill Callahan coaching him and maybe a different offensive system, maybe with a little more wisdom, he is still pretty young. You know, he's not 32 or 31. He's still pretty young. Can he be better than he was in Pittsburgh? And it was pointed out by a lot of people. I think it was one of the first things I heard said when Jake was on with you, is when you play in that division, you're playing some pretty fierce edge rushers, and including the best one twice a year in Myles Garrett. So let's give him a chance. He is overpaid. Let's just get that out there right off the start. I don't want to hear this during the season. They paid $50 million for this guy. Well, yeah, that's the only choice you have if you want to get a decent starter who is still in the prime of his career. He is overpaid. He will be overpaid. So let's get that on the table right now.
By the way, according to overthecap.com, Dan Moore's $21 million average per year is sixth among left tackles in the NFL. So, again, you're right, Willie, that in free agency, players get overpaid. That is the nature of free agency. What works well in terms of Dan Moore's ability is his durability. According to Nick Suss of the Tennessean, dating to his days at Texas A&M, Moore has started 106 out of 108 possible games. So the one thing that you can count on with Dan Moore is that he will play. And that is a big part of this, considering the issues that the Titans have had bringing in injured players. Dan Moore, for all his faults, he does play. And that's a big part of it if you are going to invest significant dollars in a player.
Right. And once again, there are flaws with who's available. There aren't 12 left tackles in the grocery store when you go and fix the problem that you had. So if you're wailing about this pick, then what would you have them do? Use the first-round pick on a tackle? I don't think that's going to happen. Trade? You can't trade draft picks. They have nothing to trade, really. So this was the best alternative, I think, that they had to try to get a sizable upgrade. The other alternative was to run Nicholas Petit-Frere back out there and have it 2.0 or 3.0 with him and hope that the light goes on. So this is the cost of doing business. They don't have a ton of extra cash floating around like they did last year. So if you notice, they haven't been super busy. There were a lot of big signings there. That was really their only sizable one, wouldn't you say?
Yes, for sure. Here is...
So if they had signed a 34-year-old guy or a 30-year-old guy who had been hurt, you know, let's take somebody with like a Ryan Kelly profile. You'd have the same people bringing up a lot of just different set of problems, right? Oh, he can't stay healthy. Why do they want this guy? He hasn't been healthy in 4 years. He's past his prime. All of these flaws come out. These aren't perfect players that end up, otherwise they would be with their original team.
So here is a quick synopsis of Dan Moore's career, according to ESPN. Because before yesterday, to borrow a phrase from Floyd Reese, I did not know Dan Moore from a jar of Vicks. So I had to do plenty of research yesterday, and here is a quick synopsis of Dan Moore's career, according to ESPN. He was a four-year starter at left tackle after the Steelers selected him in the fourth round of the 2021 draft. He fought off competition for the starting job in 2023 when the Steelers drafted tackle Broderick Jones in the first round. Moore continued to solidify his job in 2024, despite the Steelers drafting tackle Troy Fontenot, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, in the first round, and Team Brass saying it envisioned Jones playing left tackle before the season. Jones, though, remained at right tackle throughout the season after Fontenot suffered a season-ending knee injury in September. The 26-year-old Moore had a rough end to his 2024 season and finished with a league-high 12 sacks allowed. He also recorded 21 penalties over four seasons, including 11 holding calls. And here is the fickle nature of quick reaction to free agency, Willie. Seth Walder at ESPN had a running blog grading all of the major free agent moves. A lot of websites did this. Seth Walder gave the Titans an A, not an A minus, an A, on signing Dan Moore. The Athletic, doing the same exercise, gave the Titans a D for signing Dan Moore. So, instant reaction. One person says A. Another person says D. This is the humorous aspect of having to react to these things on the fly. We have two varying opinions on this signing, according to the Athletic and ESPN.
That's fascinating. I haven't read Walder's take. I did read the grade in the Athletic, but it really doesn't have a lot of detail in the Athletic's grade. They go down through all the a ton of signings there. But he says, in part in the Athletic, he was a fourth round pick who's got the body of a first round left tackle, 6'5", 315. But a lot has been made on the most sacks, most pressures in the NFL since 2021. So, and it says, you know, the Titans obviously allowed a lot of sacks. But I think a lot of things go into that. Right? Who's the quarterback? How long does he hold the ball? We came to learn that last year, right? That Will Levis, and even before him, Ryan Tannehill, they held the ball more than most quarterbacks. Levis might hold the ball more than any quarterback. And that does translate into how many times the tackle and the guard and everybody else on the score sheet gets credited with a sack against or a pressure against. So the systems can help that. Some. I don't know if that's the issue with Moore. I'd be lying if I told you I have a great scouting board on Dan Moore. But I don't know if I would give it a D, and I don't know if I would give it an A. I'd give it a wait and see, and tell me the alternative would be how I would grade it.
So Seth Walder, who gave the Titans an A for this signing on ESPN, he wrote, quote, "We don't know who will play quarterback for the Titans in 2025, but that person will have better pass protection with Moore now on the team. Moore is coming off a nice season in which he put up career highs in both pass block win rate, 93%, 11th best out of 66 qualifiers, and run block win rate, 76%, 23rd best. Offensive line can be a place where players take longer to develop, so I'm inclined to invest in Moore's improvement." He continues, "Last season, Titans tackles J.C. Latham, 88%, and Nicholas Petit-Frere, 82%, ranked 40th and 64th in pass block win rate among tackles. If Latham, their first round pick in 2024, develops, the Titans could have a really nice pair of tackles, which is crucial for setting a quarterback up for success."
Well, you guys hit this yesterday right after the signing, because my first thought was, and they hinted at it at the combine, that they might, if they found a better left tackle. So you know they had been sort of plotting this, I think, looking at who was available. And I am looking forward to hearing the explanation by Borgonzi and by Callahan as to why they thought this was best move. But I suspect that just because Dan Moore's always been a left tackle, that's why they're moving Latham to right tackle. But I'm a little disappointed. I really thought that Latham, if you stick with him, he's so young, that could be the best guy that you want left tackle long term. But I don't know what they're seeing there. Maybe they just think he'll be a great right tackle, which isn't the worst thing in the world if he's really, really good for a second contract and beyond. But to me, that may be the bigger story than who they're putting in there at left tackle. But ideally, right, your line now is pretty set at four of the five spots, and you can always probably find a guard somewhere in there.
Right. It could be Dylan Radins coming back and playing right guard. So they do have they do have an opening at right guard, but theoretically they have their left tackle in Dan Moore, their left guard in Peter Skoronski, their center with Lloyd Cushenberry, right guard TBD, and J.C. Latham at right tackle. And we will discuss all of that coming up. But you're right. You touched on one thing, Willie, about the sack numbers that Dan Moore allowed. And each statistical service has a different way of measuring sacks. So, like, if you go by Pro Football Focus, that's different than if you went by Next Gen Stats, which is different if you went by True Media, which I believe ESPN uses. They all have different ways of evaluating sacks allowed. So I've seen varying numbers in terms of how many sacks allowed Dan Moore totaled last season. Bill Barnwell points out that J.C. Latham allowed 14 sacks last season, according to Next Gen Stats, the second most of any player in the league. The guy who allowed more sacks than Latham is the guy taking over the job at left tackle in Tennessee. Moore allowed a league-high 16.5 sacks, although, to your point, Willie, he probably wasn't as bad as that sounds. Some of those sacks were a product of playing in front of Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, who have a habit of extending plays. Moore allowed only 14 quick quarterback pressures, which was a much more reasonable total, ranking 53rd among all linemen. Latham allowed 26, which was tied for second most behind Seahawks tackle Charles Cross.
Okay, let's just give you one more take. And this was, I don't have the latest one, but this is last year's preseason scouting report from the FTN Football Almanac, which is another set. We're comparing numbers, right? And I think this is good for our audience. Look, these people have done the math. This is not your math, Adam, or my math, but it's easy to hear these. He's given up the most sacks. Right. And then you throw it in there and it sounds like he's terrible. Right. But there's different ways of calculating numbers. When it's 11 on 11, it's not always clear cut everything that happens on the field. But every year it seems like there are advancements there. But here's the scouting report on Dan Moore from that for the Pittsburgh Steelers going into last year after 3 years being a starter. Dan Moore Jr. might be the odd man out among Pittsburgh's young linemen, which obviously did not end up being the case. He started all the games. Moore told reporters during this year's OTAs he does not feel comfortable playing on the right side of the line. That might be a clue as to why they're moving Latham to the right and keeping Moore on the left. Moore's performance at left tackle is what forced this conversation in the first place. His 8.2 pressure rate, 8.2% pressure rate, 4.8% blown block rate on runs were 6th and 10th highest among tackles in 2023, with a minimum of 500 snaps. It was the second time in 3 years he led all Steelers linemen in both categories. So it just sounds like he's been a flawed starter, albeit at a very, very difficult position for a few years now, which is why the Steelers let him walk, and the Steelers must have something better in mind.
One piece of Titans-adjacent news: former Chargers and Titans cornerback Christian Fulton has agreed to terms with the Kansas City Chiefs on a 2-year, $20 million contract, including $15 million fully guaranteed, according to Adam Schefter. So good job, Christian Fulton, securing that bag. Christian Fulton headed from Los Angeles to Kansas City.
There's always a job for somebody who's halfway decent at covering, right? I mean, you just keep playing. If you can cover somebody, at least if there's a chance you can cover somebody, they'll sign you. So I always think this is going on around the league too. What would be the Titans' reaction to that? A Titans fan who watched Christian Fulton play here. Can't wait to get rid of this guy. Let him move on. Who wants Christian Fulton? Well, the Chiefs want Christian Fulton, right? So they don't think he's that bad.
And he was productive with the Chargers last year as well.
He did, well, yeah, and we could have had that conversation last year. But I guess the point is, this happens around the league with all the teams. I'm sure the Steelers fans are laughing, saying, ha, the Titans signed Dan Moore. Can you believe how much money the Titans paid Dan Moore?
You may have missed this yesterday, but we did have one Steelers fan text in and say that Dan Moore is going to make Andre Dillard look like Bruce Matthews.
Right. And I'm sure, look, this is how you always have your team under the microscope.
Correct.
You're watching your team's offensive line every week, every play. You're not watching the other team's offensive line struggle and go through issues, right? Everybody's got a patch of players like this. And so Dan Moore is in this category. But that's why in the middle of the season last year, I think we all were laughing that we're saying, hey, you know what? Maybe it's the Titans. When we were going down the list of players that were doing decent things for different teams, right? They were still in the league being productive. It's not always just the flaw of the team that lets them go. It's just the state of the league. Sometimes you change addresses. You get into a different system. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. The Titans really have to hope that Dan Moore matures, gets to another level, and Bill Callahan can get the best out of him.
That's a good segue to our next segment, because there is pressure on one person in particular with the signing of Dan Moore by the Titans yesterday. 615-737-1025. Any thoughts now that you are a day removed from the Titans paying Dan Moore 4 years, $82 million, $50 million guaranteed? Now that you've had some time to digest it, how do you feel? Do you feel differently than you did yesterday? Let us know on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. And make sure that you join us, 1025, 1063, the game, for an SEC watch party for the rest of the week as we broadcast live from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Mellow Mushroom on Broadway tomorrow, Assembly Food Hall on Thursday, and the Pub in the Gulch on Friday. On-site coverage of the SEC tournament brought to you by Toyota, Guinness, the new Cumberland.com, Volunteer Hose and Gasket, and Sloan's Motorcycle ATV. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com/events. Tune in tomorrow on 102.5, 106.3 The Game for Vanderbilt men's basketball as the number 12-seeded Commodores take on the 13th-seeded Texas Longhorns to start the SEC men's basketball tournament. Tip-off is at 2:30 p.m. and the pregame will begin at 2. Coverage is also available on 102.5 on the 102.5 The Game app and at thegamenashville.com. Quickly, Willie, how are you feeling about Vanderbilt and Texas tomorrow?
Tough game. Texas has excellent talent. They've got a lottery pick in Trey Johnson who can take over the game. I think Vanderbilt has a coaching edge, but Vanderbilt's lost a couple here, so I think it's important for Vanderbilt to try to get a little momentum back here, but they'll have their hands full. I haven't looked at the line. I would imagine it's probably a pick 'em kind of game. I think Texas has overall talent edge. I think Vanderbilt has the coaching edge.
By the way, Vanderbilt defeated Texas at Memorial Gym earlier this season, 86-78. So
it was tight, and that went back and forth. The final score probably doesn't tell you that tight what kind of game it was. It was a swing game. Vanderbilt jumped ahead. Texas made a big run, went back ahead, and then they were exchanging blows in the second half. And I think Vanderbilt benefited from being on their home court there.
So the SEC tournament kicks off tomorrow. Starts at noon. South Carolina and Arkansas at Bridgestone Arena. As I said before the break, we will be on location Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Come join us for an SEC tournament watch party. So we were talking about Dan Moore, the Titan signing of the offensive tackle to a 4-year contract. And Willie, right before we went to break, you mentioned a name that I was going to bring up in this segment. Somebody who I feel there's a lot of pressure on him now. And that's Bill Callahan. Or as Jared says, Bill Callahan! There's a lot of pressure on Bill Callahan. And Paul Kaharsky at paulkaharsky.com had a story. The headline, with Titans O-line investments, I have immediate expectations. He writes, quote, Bill Callahan gets a pass for the year one failures. He probably overestimated some of what he had to work with, thinking he could make more of Nicholas Petit-Frere and Jalen Duncan than he ultimately could. Rand Carthon should have known better what those players were and given the elder Callahan more. Now, Bill Callahan has had a hand in choosing the two starting tackles and the starting center, and he will also chime in on the right guard. So here is the projected Titans starting offensive line as we enter the season. Dan Moore at left tackle, making $21 million per season. That is sixth among left tackles, according to overthecap.com. You have Peter Skoronski at left guard. As we know, he was the 11th overall pick in the NFL draft. Lloyd Cushenberry at center, making $12.5 million per season. That is fourth among centers, according to overthecap.com. The right guard position is still a question mark, although we can maybe project Dylan Radins filling that role. And then J.C. Latham at right tackle, of course, the 7th overall pick in the NFL draft. So that is there has been a lot of investment made by the Tennessee Titans, both in money and in draft capital on that offensive line. It is now up to Bill Callahan to work that magic that we thought he would last season, was unable to do it. I think the pressure is on Bill Callahan to make the most of this improved on paper offensive line.
I do think you've seen the investment over the last 2 years, and I would hope, just forget about who the offensive line coach is. I just think that with that investment, you should have higher expectations. And now with Latham in his second year, I don't think he's even close to his ceiling, but he should be better in year two than year one. Skoronski was clearly better in year two than he was in year one with some of the issues he had there. And there's strength in numbers. So if there's just a better tackle on the one side, that should help everybody down the line on the chain. So is it unreasonable to think that they could have an average to maybe a little better than average offensive line? That's got to be the hope, right? I wouldn't put it all on Bill Callahan, but certainly Callahan, you would have to say, has what much more to work with on paper here.
The way that I've described Bill Callahan in the past, and this is where I adjust my big, thick glasses and talk even more like a nerd than I usually do. I'm a big fan of role-playing video games like Final Fantasy, for example. And in those games, as you progress through the game, you can get power-ups, right? Like you can add a certain type of armor or a certain type of weapon. And those accessories give you extra points on your total. Like if you've got an attack rating of 10, I'm just throwing out the number there, but you use this sword, now you have an attack rating of 13. And that's what I felt like Bill Callahan was, or I thought he was going to be last season. He was going to be that power-up. That, yeah, Nicholas Petit-Frere may be a 60 as an offensive tackle, but by working with Bill Callahan, he'll be a 65. Obviously, you can only do so much coaching, and that did not work last season for the Titans. But the Titans have set up Bill Callahan and themselves with, again, on paper, what should be a much better offensive line.
Right. The whole Bill Callahan thing, this is now his second year. It's a unique situation because his son is the head coach. But let's not all act like everybody that made this or built this guy up to be the miracle worker made it on their own assessment, right? This isn't my evaluation of Bill Callahan. I'm not an offensive line guru that can watch an offensive line and say whether the coach is doing well or not. I think there's way too many people in the media and even some fans that think that if an offensive line is struggling, the offensive line coach must be the problem, or vice versa. If the offensive line's playing well, they must have a great offensive line coach. Sometimes it's not, it's got to be the players themselves. It's the talent. But you would have to say that people who know football, they, to a person, almost always say that Bill Callahan is a step above, a cut above everybody else. So feeling pressure, I mean, he's just a coach. He's the coach. He'll do the best he can with what he's got to work with. He's got a really good track record. So if they flunk, I'm not putting that on Bill Callahan. I don't think Bill Callahan's putting pressure on himself. Are we just going to decide he's a bad offensive line coach if they struggle this year?
I wouldn't say so. But to your point, considering his it's reminiscent in a way. It's not a perfect comparison, but it's reminiscent in a way of what we've talked about with Brian Callahan, right? When the Titans hired Brian Callahan, they made sure to put in the news release all of the quarterbacks he worked with in some capacity. And that, as I've said on multiple occasions, that maybe raised the bar a little bit too high for Brian Callahan. And he was supposed to be a quarterback developer. What the hell happened to Will Levis? And on a smaller scale, considering how highly respected Bill Callahan is, I think maybe there was an outsized expectation of how much he could influence the play on the offensive line.
Well, yeah, but the players he had to work with were so limited
I agree.
Especially at the right tackle. That was the Achilles heel that affected everybody else. But I think you could say that individually, I think he took Peter Skoronski to a next level. And I think that he got a good first year out of J.C. Latham, a rookie playing on the left side. So I wouldn't grade him poor in the first year at all. It was a function of a lot of things. And I think what we discovered also during the season was how a quarterback holding the ball can make an offensive line look bad. It was a combination of two things that made it look as bad as it did on some Sundays, where A, you had a huge problem at right tackle, and B, you had a quarterback that was holding on the ball and did not have good pocket presence at all. That you put those two things together, I don't care who the coaches are, right? That's a problem. And that's what I'm looking forward to in this coming year with a different quarterback, presumably, and now these tweaks on the offensive line. Can it look better?
615-737-1025. Your continued thoughts on the state of the Titans offensive line. Bill Callahan, Dan Moore, you tell us. 615-737-1025. Before Willie has to depart the show, because he has to leave at noon to do his Predators broadcasting duties, I do want to get into the Predators for a segment in the aftermath of the NHL trade deadline, because there was something that Barry Trotz said on Friday that might have gotten lost in the shuffle, but I do think it's important to touch on, and we'll do that next. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.
Gruner did a lot of adjusting this year, which I give him a lot of credit, and I handed him a tough hand at times, in terms of players, up and down, number of players, all those things. I give him a tough hand, but he's growing as a coach all the time. I think he's a hell of a coach. I think he's a hell of a person. He's done everything in, like I said, in the hockey business. And I guarantee you, he'll take the summer, he'll come back, and he's more prepared for everything.
That was Barry Trotz in his news conference on Friday following the NHL trade deadline. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan here with you. The Predators are back in action tonight. That's where Willie is. Willie is in San Jose, California. Predators at Sharks tonight, 9:30 puck drop. So if you prefer an energy drink or coffee, however you get your caffeine, I suggest
it's March Madness. It's March Madness. You're running on adrenaline. I don't know if you need a lot of extra. If you need a little extra caffeine shot, okay. That's okay, but it's March Madness. You're gonna go on adrenaline. The great Dale Brown, coach for LSU for a long time, used to say, "I don't need to sleep. I don't need to sleep during the March." Like he was, just willing his team. He was just a motivator who had absolutely zero X's and O's on the court. I don't think he watched tape of the other team. He clearly didn't, but he could get people going with that. Channel your inner Dale Brown.
As the son of a 3.5-year-old, I will need an extra shot of something. It may not be caffeine. Either way.
Okay.
So that was Barry Trotz after the trade deadline on Friday. He said that about Andrew Burnett. I saw Robbie Stanley tweet out the quote. He transcribed it. He tweeted it out. It generated a lot of reaction because we don't have to go through the whole thing. We know this Predator season has been a disappointment, to say the least. And I think there are a lot of people who wonder what the outcome of the season could mean for Andrew Burnett. So to hear Barry Trotz, in that clip at least, be supportive of Andrew Burnett caught people's attention. But Willie, you had Barry Trotz in the broadcast booth with Chris Mason for the game on Saturday against Chicago. And you asked him about Andrew Burnett, and he had an answer that you found to be interesting that was a little bit different than the answer we just played there. Did we lose Willie?
Okay.
There he is.
Well, no, I thought you were going to play the clip.
Oh, sorry.
I thought it was just a unique setting. Barry Trotz joined us for the entire second period. I don't know how many general managers have ever done that. I've seen it happen in football broadcasts for preseason games. I've seen general managers go in after the trade deadline in baseball booths where it's a little more laid back. A baseball game's, you know, by definition, a little bit more laid back than a hockey game. But I found it to be very insightful. And if you really listen closely, you got a lot of insight on a lot of different people, individual players, different moves that he made. A lot of it was the same that he had already echoed in the press conference, in the interview with Jared, where he was on before anybody else. But he went into a little more detail of what the process has been like with Andrew Burnett, which I found to be very interesting.
So we don't have the clip at the ready, so you will have to describe for us what he said.
Oh, well, okay. What he basically said was, I think there was some early on conversation when they struggled out of the gate. As we know, this is where it hit a crisis point early at 0-5 with a lot of new players. I think that it seems to be, based on what Barry Trotz told us, there was a lot of discussion of Andrew Burnett saying, this is my system, this is the way I think we should play. And a former coach who's now his boss saying, look, I've been there. I think as a coach, you're going to have to adapt the system to the players to the hand that you're dealt. And I think that's really what's going on. Barry Trotz went to great lengths to say some of the things that they have adjusted, they have adapted, and that he has dealt him a very tough hand with the injuries, the trades, et cetera. It hasn't worked, as everybody knows. They've sunk to the bottom. But I think moving ahead, that really becomes the question, because Barry Trotz chose Andrew Burnett as his hand-picked guy. He had, in John Hines, a guy that, by what Barry Trotz said, was doing a very good job, but he just thought that Andrew Burnett was a unique talent, a young head coach on the rise, and that's who he wanted. And he went way back with him. But I think since that time, I think we've known from the start, if you looked at the way Barry Trotz's teams played and the way Andrew Burnett's teams played, they're different, right? So the question was, how can they get on the same page and find the right formula together? But I think what's happened a lot is Andrew Burnett has a vision of how hockey should be played. It's innovative. It's a little outside the box. He studies other things, and so he's into that. But at the same time, it may not fit the personnel that he's got. So that's where they are right now.
As I've said many times before, I don't doubt that Andrew Burnett is a good hockey coach. We have evidence that he is a good hockey coach. I'm not sure he's the right coach for this roster as it's currently constituted. I'm curious, though, what the reaction would be if the Predators, they finish the season, they're going to miss the playoffs. I was thinking about this the other day, Willie, and I'm not sure if there's a way to actually figure this out. But depending on when the Predators are eliminated officially from postseason contention, I wonder, which will be earlier than normal, I'm wondering when the last time they were out of it with however many games left in the season. I've tried to figure that out. It's not easy to figure out. I'm saying, like, if they get eliminated with 9 games left in the season, when was the last time it was that sort of thing?
Mathematically, you mean?
Yes, mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. Officially eliminated from postseason contention.
Yeah, it's been a while. I think Barry Trotz's last season as the coach, which was 2013-14, I think I don't know if it was 9 or 10 games out, but it was – they didn't. They ended up having a decent amount of points. I think they probably had 87 or 88 points that year. But I think they were. There's a difference between out of it, where you kind of know you're not going to get there, and then officially being mathematically out of it. You see what I'm saying? Like that's it could mean two different things.
Yes, I digress. Right? But my point is, I'm curious what the reaction would be locally if the Predators season ends and Barry Trotz either says or just doesn't say, and Andrew Burnett is coming back next season after the season they had. I think there is an expectation from a lot of Predators fans that someone needs to pay the price for how poorly this season went. So Andrew Burnett being the coach of this team is the easiest scapegoat by far. And I'm just incredibly curious, again, to know what the reaction would be if the Predators decided to bring back Andrew Burnett after how badly this season went. And we'll see what happens.
Okay, well, let me ask you this,
sure,
Adam. Would it make a difference how they played from now until the end of the season? Because
now I would say yes, but I would say yes, but I thought that would work for John Hines, because the Predators played well under John Hines after all of the trades they made a couple of years ago, after Roman Josi and Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson and Philip Forsberg were all injured. Barry Trotz said he was basically fielding a minor league team the last quarter of the season. The Predators made it to, I think, game 80 or 81 before they were eliminated from postseason contention. I thought that would have been enough to convince Barry Trotz to keep John Hines. And that was not the case. So normally I would say yes to your question, but based on recent history, I'm not so sure.
I think it's a different situation now, because the big thing is that Barry Trotz handpicked Andrew Burnett.
Yes.
This is his guy.
Yes.
And so I don't think he's just going to have as easy a time of casting him aside and moving on from him as it was when it wasn't his guy. And I think that's just human, right? But there are a lot of things that have to be sort of vetted out, and that is, you know, can you get a vibe from the players? Is Andrew Burnett the coach that these players want to play for? Not that you let the players decide who coaches the team, right? That's not really how it works, but it is important to kind of see how the players react, fit, you know, do they like the environment? Is there an addition to a staff that could be the right ingredient? There's a lot to consider, I think. I would say this too. When I just look at the numbers and I look at how the team play, I think the team has played hard. Other than maybe a lull in there when they kind of hit the realization they weren't going to make it, I think they were human and said, oh man, we're just not going to be able to climb this hill, and that's it. But for the most part, I think they played hard. I think the offense generates enough chances. You and I have looked at those numbers all year long. The zone time, the things that they're trying to do, I think that's there. The defensive coverage, that needs work. And I'm not sure if that's the head coach or a tweak to who's in charge, like the defensive coordinator, if you will. That's not really a title in hockey, but I think the attention to detail on defense must get a lot better. And I think that's something that Barry Trotz, as a guy that was one of the best, I think, at attention to detail on defense, has to be seeing every night. So I think these are the issues out there that they've got to sort through. And I think that's part of where we go back to our original quote of Andrew Burnett, I think, started off with, this is how we play. Everybody, all these new guys have got to adapt and play this way, and we'll be okay. And that struggle was with, hey, they may not be able to win. This may not be the best way to win with this group. We may have to adjust this system. And so I think that's been a process that's gone on throughout the season.
The Predators are back in action tonight, looking for their fourth consecutive win at the Shark Tank against the San Jose Sharks. Puck drop at 9:30, pregame at 8:30, right here on 102.5, 106.3. The game, we will bid adieu to Willie Donick as he prepares for that game. Jake Lyman will sit in with me for the remainder of the show. We will get back into the NFL. There's a very important question that we have for the Tennessee Titans, and I know you all have that same question as well. We will do that next. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Nobody does it better than Regent Seven Seas Cruises. Enjoy all-inclusive, unrivaled luxury with unlimited shore excursions, indulgent cuisine, personalized service, and more aboard spacious all-suite ships. Visit rssc.com to experience the unrivaled.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.